Through the years, I've done a fair number of funerals. I wouldn't say I've done a lot, but I've done quite a few. And some of them kind of stick out more than others. When I lived in Iowa, I was kind of the standby funeral guy for the local funeral home. We lived in a small community. And a lot of times you would have people in the community who died or someone's relative who had died, and they weren't connected with any churches or anything like that. And so the funeral director would sometimes call me up and say, "Cloyce, we have an unchurched family. They want a preacher to do the funeral." And so I did a lot of those. The saddest funeral I ever remember doing, it was in the middle of winter. I think it was in probably January, maybe December. And it was a cloudy, cold day. And there were one, two, three, four. There were six of us. It was a graveside ceremony. It was a lady who had lived out in the western part of Iowa. She had lived in a nursing home all of her adult life. She was not mentally incapacitated. She was just she was a loner in the truest sense of the word. The six people that were there was the local, she was from our community, and her parents had died there and were buried many, many years ago. And so she wanted to be buried where her parents were. The six people that were there was the funeral director from our community. There was the funeral director from the community where she was at, where they had transported the body. There were the two men who dug the grave. There was me. And then the only other person that was there was her brother-in-law. And it was just a very simple graveside ceremony. They just said they wanted a ceremony. I started talking to the brother-in-law. I said, "So tell me about your sister-in-law." He said, "I honestly don't know much about her." He said, "When she was a very young woman, she went into a nursing home. Just kind of decided that's where she wanted to live." She said, "My sister and I never really had much contact with her. She seemed fine with that. She didn't really have any friends, and she lived in this nursing home a long time, probably 40, 50 years. Didn't really have any friends in the nursing home. Didn't have any friends in the community. Was not close to her own sister or brother-in-law. That was the only family that she had left after her parents died. She just really had almost no contact with anybody. She was, I think, in her 70s when she died." And I have thought about that I don't know how many times. Just every now and then that memory comes up. How do you live 7 decades on this planet and end your life and pretty much have absolutely no influence? And whenever I think about that woman, I think about a question that is written in James chapter 4. And at the end, or I guess in the middle of verse 14, James asks the question, "What is your life?" That's a good question. A few English translation, the New American Standard rewords the question, or it says basically, "You do not know what your life is." Most English translations, NIV, ESV, American Standard, King James, most of them put it in the form of this question, and I think that's exactly how it was intended to be read. He describes some facets of human life, and then he just says, "So what is your life?" That's an arresting question. It's one of those things you're reading along, and when you see the question, you have to stop and, "Well, that's a good question. I need to think about that." And I think what James is inviting us to do here is to take a look at me and my life, and what has my life amounted to? So I want us to spend some time tonight looking at James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. It's a very well-known text, I think, to most of us. But I think it speaks to really this whole issue about the purpose of life. It speaks to the issue of what we're doing with our lives and the assumptions that we make and the actions that we take. So we're going to look at this. And what James does, he gives us a series of pictures of our life. He starts out in verses 13 and 14 by saying, this is what human life looks like. He says, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. I want to suggest, first of all, as he describes human life in verses 13 and 14, it's a picture of busyness. Come, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to go this place, we're going to go to that place. Isn't that actually a pretty good description of human existence? We're busy. We're just busy all the time. How many of you have absolutely nothing on your agenda? Most people I know have got lots of things on our agenda. Now, I'm a list maker. I live and die by lists. And every day I make out lists. Every week I make out lists. And at the beginning of every week I try to sit down and just, here's my list of things I have to get done this week. Sometimes it's relatively short, but usually it's pretty long. And there's big stuff, and there's little stuff, and there's busy stuff. There's just busyness all around. Sometimes it's a matter of simple things like paying the bills, and yet that has a relative kind of importance. I figure if I don't pay my electric bill, I'll figure that out here in a few weeks. It's not the most earth-shattering thing, but it's an important thing. It's got some urgency to it. A lot of my time is spent studying the scriptures, preparing sermons, working on Bible classes, doing PowerPoints, you know, the really important stuff. And I just do stuff all the time. I at the beginning of every year, I kind of make out some lists of things I'd like to do. This year, I am really ambitious. So far, I haven't done a single thing yet, but I got lists of all the books I want to read this year and all the topics I want to dig into and all the things I want to think about for the year. I live and die by lists, and sometimes my lists are just busyness. It's just stuff to do. But I think the biggest thing that he's trying to get across here is this danger of presumptuousness, this danger of assuming that we are in control, or assuming that my list is the most important thing in this world. Again, come now, you who say, it's really an implied rebuke. It's a mild rebuke. And I think maybe he's chiding them a little bit. Be serious. Is this really how you think, is what James is saying? Today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. There's a kind of certainty about that assertion. And I think he's trying to say we shouldn't be nearly so certain about our plans. But it's a picture, first of all, of busyness. But he says, in reality, human existence should be a picture of uncertainty, because he says, yet you do not know what your life tomorrow will bring. What is your life? He asked the question. And people always assume there's a tomorrow. Remember Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind? There's always tomorrow. No, there isn't. That's an assumption we make, and I get it. I get it that we have to make plans. I get it that we have to look ahead on our schedules. And James is not condemning planning ahead. He's certainly not. And Jesus in Matthew chapter 6 was not condemning planning ahead. What he's condemning is the presumptuousness about it, the anxiety that is sometimes produced by that. But if we just go around making the assumption that there will always be tomorrow. Remember the song, Lean on Me? Love the song. But the song says, we know that there's always tomorrow. No, we don't know that. And if we try to go through life with that constant assumption, it creates problems for us. Over in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 27, just reminds us in a very matter-of-fact sort of way, there's a lot of things we can't control. Proverbs 27, verse 1, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. And it may be that James is quoting this, or at least paraphrasing it. I certainly think he has that concept in mind. Don't boast about it. We're just not really sure. It is God alone who controls the rising and the setting of the sun. It is God alone who decides whether or not the sun will rise tomorrow. He's the one who will decide if we'll even make it to midnight tonight. We don't know. And God has not told us exactly when this world will end. And so we need to live with that little bit of cautiousness. Over in Psalm 104 down in verse 19. The text says, He made the moon to mark the seasons. The sun knows its time for setting. So there is always an element of uncertainty about human life. We're busy all the time, but we need to remember we don't really have a lot of control over many of the things we plan on doing. And finally, he says, it's a picture of brevity. If you go back to our text in James chapter 4, For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. And the word that's used there sometimes refers to water vapor that evaporates. For example, if you've ever boiled water on a stove or a campfire, you see that little wisp of steam that comes up, and before it goes about 3 or 4 inches above the pot, it just disappears. And sometimes it's used in the Old Testament to describe a vapor of smoke. If you've ever blown out a candle, and you'll see that little wisp of smoke, and it just goes up an inch or two above the wick, and then it just disappears. He says that's a pretty good description of human life. Now, we don't think that way. We think years. Well, I'm 59 years old. I'm 70 years old. I'm 25 years old. We think in terms of years, and it, from God's point of view, well, actually, that's just a vapor. It's a temporary, not very long kind of thing. Again, from the book of Psalms, here's God's perspective on it, Psalm number 90, in verse 9 and 10, For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. I think it's remarkable that Moses wrote this. Moses lived to be 120, but apparently by the time Moses wrote this, the typical lifespan of an Israelite was, oh, guess what, 70-ish, 80-ish. How true that is even today. He says, and yet in the grand scheme of things, they end rather soon and we fly away. I'm 59 years old. I don't feel like I'm 59. It doesn't seem like I've been on this earth for 59 years. Now, there's some weeks that have made it feel that way. But in some days, it really feels that way. But, you know, 59 years, it doesn't seem that way. And yet in the grand scheme of things, life, human life, is really, really brief. And we need to decide how we're going to spend that time. 70 years, that is 25,568 days. 25,000 days. If I were to tell you, I'm going to give you $25,568, you'd think, cha-ching. You think, all right, yeah, I can do that. What would you do if I gave you $25,000 tonight? What would you do with it? Some people would invest it. Some people would go live large. Some people would party hardy. Some people would buy more clothes. Some people would buy a bigger TV. There's a lot of things that people do with money. You have been given, if you live to be 70 years old, God has given you 25,000 days. Have you invested them or have you wasted them? And so this picture of human life is designed to get our attention. At one level, it's a long time. At another level, it's not very long. And so we need to be extremely thoughtful about how we use it. Now, back in our text, the next thing he talks about is the godly life in verse 15. Instead of living this presumptuous way, instead of just constantly assuming there will be another day to come, he says, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. And there are a lot of common attitudes that people bring to life. I think the real issue that he's trying to bring forward here in verse 15 is who's in charge. Who is in charge of your life? We like to think we're in charge. Well, I'm going to do this. And again, that goes back up to verse 13. We are going to do this. I am going to do this. Remember the poem, I am the master of my fate, the captain of my soul. No, you're not. Yeah, you make choices that have eternal consequences. I get that. But there's a lot of things about your life you can't control. There are so many things that are so totally out of your hands, it's really a delusion to go through life thinking, oh, I'm just in charge of all this. No, you're not. Now, there are some people that rather than thinking, well, if the Lord wills, I'll do this, there are some fatalists. Well, why bother? Now, they get the brevity of life. I may not be here tomorrow anyway, so why bother with anything? And that's certainly not the point that James is making. James, yes, says our lives are uncertain, our lives are brief. No, you may not be here tomorrow, but that's no reason to throw up your hands and just give up and not make any effort at all. Some people live their lives with utter indifference about the eternal consequences. Well, whatever. It is what it is. Well, or if you want to be more pleasant about it, que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. Well, no, that's not a particularly wholesome way to look at life either. You need to care about what's going on in your life. You need to care about your priorities. You need to care about your choices. You need to care about your impact on this world. And so indifference is not really a solution. And again, I've said this already, but I want to emphasize it here. And verse 15, I think, in many ways brings it to a head. If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. There's a presumptuous approach that people take to life. We simply presume that we have unlimited time, unlimited resources, that we just have complete mastery over it. That's presumptuousness. Now, James is not advocating religious fatalism here. Sometimes when people hear the phrase God willing, they view it almost in a Calvinistic sense that every little detail of your life has already been mapped out by God, and really you don't have a lot of control over that. I deny that completely. The Bible teaches very firmly that we have self-will. We have self-determination. There are some things we can decide. We have free will as human beings, and we decide if our lives are going to fit into God's plans or if they're not. That's a choice that we make every day. So he's not talking here. I'm several clicks behind anyway. So that's not what he's talking about. What he is talking about, this godly life, we need to make sure our priorities are right. Have I included God in my plans? Have I let God determine what my priorities are? We need to have the right kind of purpose. What is the purpose of your life? I try to challenge people to do this periodically. If there was one verse, and there's not a right answer to this, if there is one verse that defines your life, what would it be? A lot of people have different answers. Some people like Matthew 6:33, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness and all these things shall be added to you. That's a pretty common one. The one that I personally like comes from the book of Philippians. Now, a lot of people like Philippians 1 verse 21, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. I actually like the verse before that when he says in verse 20, according to my earnest expectation and hope that I shall not be put to shame in anything, but that now, as always, Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. That's my favorite one. What's the purpose of my life? It is to magnify Christ. It is to exalt Christ, either by the way I live or by the way I die, either one. And that's my favorite one. But verses like that give us a sense of purpose. And when you have a sense of purpose, you have a sense of direction. When you have a sense of direction, that changes how you make decisions. If I want to go this way and all my decisions are leading me that way, there's a problem. If I want to go upward toward God, if I want to live a Godward life and spend eternity with Him, my decisions need to push me in that direction. And that's what this sense of purpose is all about. And ultimately, this is a matter of faith. Do I really believe that God makes a difference in my life? Do I really believe that God is the one who's steering and pushing, God is calling? Do I really believe that my life needs to be consistent with a life of faith? Do I really believe that God's will is important in my day-to-day decisions, my day-to-day actions, my day-to-day transactions? Do I really believe that God... Have I put him there? And even if my plans don't work, I know that God's plans always, always work. So that's James' picture of the godly life there in verse 15. And then he gives us one more picture of life, and that is the wasted life. And so in verse, back in our text in James chapter 4, where am I at? In verse 16 and 17, as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, to him it is sin. That's pretty strong language. If you're not living a purposeful life, if you're not living a life that is utterly and completely dedicated to God, he characterizes it in two ways. First of all, he says you're arrogant. How does that strike you? Do you ever view yourself as arrogant? I think most of them, I'm not arrogant. Well, if you're planning your life apart from God, yes, you are. That is the ultimate arrogance, is to leave the Creator out of your plans. We're creatures, and we will never rise above that level. We are creatures. We are created by God. And if anybody deserves to be included in our plans, it ought to be God. And when we leave him out of the picture, James says it is absolute arrogance for you to do that. And then he takes it even a step further. Not only is it arrogant, he says it is sinful as well. And so he says, whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. I actually like the King James Version, which says, so whoever knows the right thing to do and does it not. What I don't like about the ESV, it almost puts it as a passive thing. And I think what James is not talking about just something that kind of sort of happened. He's talking here about the consequences of deliberate choices. You choose to include God in your life, or you choose to exclude him. And even if you're guilty of thoughtlessness, it's still sin because you have acted against your Creator. To the one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, not just fails to do it, but does not do it, he says to him, it is sin. This is where we get the notion of sins of omission. We sin by failing to do the right thing. We sin by not doing what God expects us to do. Now, I realize there are some things when you're making out your list of to-do things, when you're making out your agenda. I understand that sometimes you have to decide what I'm going to do today, what I will do tomorrow, what I'll do the next day. I understand there's an element of choice there, and there's an element of priority, and some things you must put off. Some things you put off because you may not have enough information to make a decision, or you may put it off because you don't have the resources to finish whatever project it is you're doing. Sometimes you put it off because you just don't know what to do. And doing something is not always better than doing nothing. Sometimes you need to wait. But sometimes we put things off just because I don't want to mess with it. And sometimes we put things off because I don't want to do the right thing. And if I just kind of put it off, maybe somebody else will take care of it. It's brushing aside our moral responsibility. And that's the kind of thing James is talking about. If you have the opportunity to do right, and you choose not to do right and say, well, I'll take care of that later. He says you have failed morally. You have fallen short of God's ideal. So it's a moral failure when we do that. Someone has observed that time once killed cannot be resurrected. The Greeks had a description of time. They pictured it as an older man. He walks toward you, and he's got this head full of hair, and he's got this long beard. And once he walked past you on the backside, he was completely bald. As he came toward you, you could grab something. Once he passed you, there's nothing to grab onto, was the point of that image. Time once killed cannot be resurrected. Time once passed and lost cannot be recovered in any way at all. How often do you find yourself lamenting, if I only had more time? Why, there's just not enough hours in the day. I just need a few more hours. And something occurred to me a long time ago And I don't, this is one of those inconvenient truths. I don't really like it, but it's absolutely true. I have exactly the same number of hours in my day that Jesus did. And I've got exactly the same number of hours in my day that Paul did and Moses and Jeremiah and all the great figures of the Bible. We have exactly, well, that, there was that time when God made the sun stand still, but that's a totally different thing. But otherwise, yeah, we got the same amount of time. And yet, I look at the people in the Bible and how much they got done, and then I look at my paltry schedule. It's not a matter of, oh, if I just had more time. We need to make better decisions about how we use our time. We need to make sure we're investing our time in godly purposes. Do the kinds of things that the Lord wants us to do. I think that as you get older, one of the things you start to really see a lot more clearly is how you've wasted time and how that so many of the things we worry about, so many of the things that we fret about, so many of the things we spend so much time trying to accumulate and do and conquer and climb, you realize at a point, boy, what a waste. What an absolute waste. It has occurred to me for some time that I am in the twilight of my illustrious career. I hate using the word career in regard to what I've been doing now for 35 years. It's like, eh, whatever. And I'm going to tell you a practical thing. You know me. I love books. I'm not sure that a human being can have too many of them. But in recent years, and particularly after we moved here, it's occurred to me, you know, I need to get rid of some of these things. Some of them have been sitting on my shelf for a very long time. To be blunt, some of them I've never read. Now, here's my real habit. I read chapter one of a whole lot of books, and then I make the mistake of reading the footnotes. And so I'm reading in chapter one in this book, and it footnotes another book, so I go get that book because I figure if I get this other book and read it, that will help me understand the footnote over here, which will help me understand. So I go get this other book, and I read chapter one, and it's got footnotes, and then I start going and getting those books and read those footnotes, which cause it. Anyway, I got a whole lot of books I've read chapter one in. And it's occurred to me, you know what, maybe I need to quit buying books and maybe read a few of them all the way through from cover to cover. And that's just perspective. I'm not saying there's necessarily anything wrong with buying books or that kind of thing, but you realize after a while that we waste a lot of time pursuing things that ultimately have absolutely no value whatsoever. So we need to take stock of our time, take stock of our days. As Moses said in Psalm number 90, so Lord, teach us to number our days that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. I've got 25,000, if I live an average lifespan, I'll have about 25,000 days. Lord, teach me to invest wisely in those days. Lord, teach me to use those days in a way that brings glory to you, in a way that brings comfort and encouragement to other people. That's what we do with our days. That is how we spend our time, and that is how we avoid this sin of wasting the life and the time and the good things that God has given to us. I've seen a lot here in view of the recent crisis about the coronavirus. And what's interesting is a lot of people have said, well, you know, because everything is closed, we can't go out as much, and people are staying at home, and we're not getting out and going and doing. It will give us more time to read and reflect and pray and that kind of thing. Yeah, I actually think we have that time all the time. I think a lot of time we've got a lot more of that than what we're willing to admit. I think we're guilty of what he says back in verse 13. We're guilty of busyness. We fill our days, we fill our moments, we fill our calendars with everything under the sun, much of which is largely useless. And we don't do the things that we ought to be doing in the first place. So James asks, I think, a really important question. What is your life? What is your life all about? And that's not, in a sense, that is a one-time decision. You know, the day that you choose to obey Jesus as Lord, in a very real sense, that decision should be made once for all. But I think the reality is that after we become Christians, we spend every day of our lives reaffirming that decision. We're supposed to spend every day of our lives answering that question, what is your life? What is my life today? What is my life just for today? What will I do that brings glory to God? What will I do that offers to Him my service, my gratitude, my talents, my abilities? That's how you answer the question, what is your life? So what is your life? As I said, I started with that really bleak story. I think about that woman periodically. I don't want to get to the end of my days here on this earth, whether I have 50 years, 60 years, 90 years, or whatever else. I can't think of a more tragic ending to a life than to end your life and you had no influence. You had no friends. You had nothing. What are you doing with your life? Think about that while we stand and sing.